to the Board of Supervisors at 8:51. We will call the meeting to order. Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation: Juergens, Dorn, Adams, Lytle, Byers, Setzer. Bauman is absent, will be absent all day. First thing on the agenda is a consent agenda, which is a general agenda. Approve minutes of meeting held January 12th. Approve all claims through January 26th. Your dollar goes to the end of the table there, sir. Approve all claims through January 26th in the amount of $376,998.81. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve additions, withdrawals, and securities on county money. Approve permit 876 for Northgate Investment, LLC, Doug Walker Consulting Group to open a trench, North 16 Midland Township. Approve bonds for various township officials.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve. Regular agenda is comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Marlon, you're up. Highway Superintendent report.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yep.
I printed it out.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, like I told you, everyone has to have the pictures, you know, so you can really understand what's going on.
I need to explain that to Marlon.
Marlon, I got an extra.
One of your new responsibilities. You're in charge, don't forget that.
We're starting off with zoning. We're going to have a meeting next month and start working on the fee schedule for basically wind energy and to the overall schedule that Gage County's got in their resolution for fees. Monday at Road and Bridge, we discussed this a little bit, but we'll start looking at all of them. I'm getting comparisons from other counties. Some of the bigger counties are higher. A lot of them are smaller ones are lower, so it's quite a range of fees. But, I mean, the board, the Planning Commission will probably make a recommendation, and the board can set them, you know, wherever they...
To touch on what Marlon's talking about there, in Road and Bridge, we talked about an ag building permit is $25 for the application. I feel that $50 is fair. The reason I say that is by the time we drive to Adams, we drive to Liberty, we've spent the $25 in gas. I don't believe $50 is prohibitive to anybody doing it. That's something we need to look at. The development fees for subdivisions is a $25 fee. We have talked about impact fees on subdivisions, something that other counties do, because a subdivision is what affects our roads. It may not affect us as much as the townships. Your area is getting hit really, really hard. But do we need to look at an impact fee when a subdivision comes in that X amount of the dollars is directed towards road recovery because of the development of it? And a lot of times those roads are minimum maintenance, which they are required to pay for half of it to bring it up to specs to begin with, correct?
The township and normally the township and the developer work out a grading plan and whoever, however they work it out, and then the county pays for half the rock and the developer pays for half to get a base established.
So I feel that needs looked at. Something else on our, some of you haven't heard me talk about it. I've talked about it for 3 to 4 years that PNZ needs to work with the assessor's office on setting valuations on our permit fees. We had talked about in there, if you look in there, there's a basement and a garage with a $20,000 valuation set. We all know that's probably not accurate. There's a garage with a $1,200 valuation set that's probably not accurate. I do believe we need to involve the assessor's office on setting the valuations when we issue a permit, which is based off of permit fees on residential is based off of dollars per thousand. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's $3 per thousand. And the last resolution the county board did was per square foot, $100 a square foot on new house construction. So,
and now the assessor says 125, so we're behind on that. We need to get that current. And it's just one of those housekeeping things that periodically we need to do, and I think we're at that point right now. It's just a cost recovery. We wanted PNZ to be self-supporting, and I think the additional fees would cover that. So that's all I'm going to touch on there, Marlon.
Okay. And that meeting is next, or February 10th. And Don, is this room open then? And we don't have
back
court
to,
here anymore.
Right.
Okay.
Back to ours now.
So we want to put our name down for February 10th.
I just got that before the meeting, so yeah, I'll get that on the calendar.
Okay, thanks. The next thing I have is a resolution directing the county highway superintendent to make a report on a possible road vacate. It's in Hanover Township between sections 33 and 34. This is a road that was closed due to the bridge being rated under the 3-ton. We had to close the bridge. And the road, it's a little different type of situation there where the county at some point in 1920, I think it was, bought some ground over east of where the road right-of-way, permanent easement was, so we're going to have to address that issue at the same time, whether we sell that land back or however we want to choose to. That'll be one of the things I'll have to find out off the deeds and what's actually there for land. So, and you got a copy of that in your report, which shows they jogged the road over 200 feet because the old roadway was all growed up in trees. So
that was in 1920?
That's what the deed or the transaction date was on it. So. And so I'll be making a report and I'll bring it back, I think, on the next meeting. I should be able to get that.
I have a question for Roger on that. Where that, if we do ever vacate or close that road, that 200-foot jog off of the property line, would we put that up for sealed bids?
I think that's probably the easiest way to do it. One thing, after I read Marlon's report and he sent me a copy, I think we need to go back and double-check that it doesn't revert to the adjacent landowners, because a lot of times it does. I'll have to check that year.
Yeah, we'll just have to check them deeds and see what it says, whatever they registered.
That's a possibility, which I don't know how much it'd be worth. Probably the only person who'd be interested is
neighbors.
Yeah.
And that's the basically the legal description is the one the county surveyor came up with. So that other side, 40-foot roadway, is a separate issue. You know, we just have to handle with either selling it back, taking bids on it, or however we can handle it. But the right-of-way is the one we're dealing with now. So.
First one. Okay, so resolution first.
Yep.
1101. Need a motion to approve or disapprove resolution 1101.
So moved.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve.
The rest I have is on the federal projects. On the Barnston one, I didn't have it on there, but we were trying to get the creek crossing out of there. So, and we're planning on stopping that project till the spring thaw then. Yesterday I was down there. They didn't have the crossing out yet. It makes a difference on the environmental documents whether that crossing's in there yet or not. If it's still in there, we have to check it regularly for make sure the fish can get through and the endangered species crawl through, stuff like that. So Then on the Beatrice North, we're working on the agreement. The state is starting to back out of them a little bit and letting the consultant and the RC and the county come up with them agreements. So we're working on them. Basically, the crews have been doing a lot of snow removal. And speaking about that, we had a couple, well, one fellow complaining a little bit, and I talked to Rex about it, but you'll hear that once in a while where we maybe got a little grass or something off the side of the road. It's all in our right-of-way, so, and the gentleman, I don't think he came. He was going to come to the meeting.
I don't see him.
And
if we, in snow removal, if we damage somebody's, if we're 9 foot off their blacktop, we can correct it in the spring. You know, a mailbox getting knocked off by snow flying is part of it. That has been the name of the game since it began. But if we do damage, which this gentleman implied, you know, we'll correct it in the spring. There's not a lot we can do now, and he's not here today, so.
And the other crew, the bridge crew, whenever they are not moving snow, we're working on the Claytonia barn now with the facilities up there for a little office and a restroom. Asphalt crew, whenever they get a chance and the highways are dry, we seal cracks. And basically the dirt crew's been working with snow equipment and keeping the roads in shape. So. And that's all I had.
Okay, Terry, do you want to touch on the sheet a little bit while we're in Road and Bridge, or you want me to touch on it?
You go ahead.
Okay. In Road and Bridge, if you guys will see in your correspondence, we have a little sheet here that says Road and Bridge Committee Meeting. This is a new format that we started. Basically, it's just taking records of the meeting. You can see what our agenda kind of was, what we discussed, the directives that we have given, and then a time frame that we want answers on it, expected dates of completions of the above directives, who was in attendance, and then we got signatures. Don is working on a sheet. I believe we ought to do these at every committee meeting we have so we know who was there, what was discussed, and signatures of the Marlins, the Gusses, the Phils, the Marks, whoever we deal with. And we can go more into the committee report on what we discussed there, but I just now was a good time for everybody to see the sheet. What else, Marlon?
That's all I had.
Okay. Anything else, Terry, on that?
No.
Emily, you're up. Hope.
I did want to bring up, I talked to you about the project tubes.
Yes, I did talk to Terry about it.
And there's, you know, when we do our 1 and 6 year plan, we have all the projects where if we're taking out a small bridge or something, we have them sized by an engineer. Then we'll go out and measure the depth of the creek, get a length on the tube and everything, and as we do that, we order the tubes. Well, when we got with the spending so much money on rock and gravel and starting to look at the budget, I called them and said we need to hold them up because of, you know, basically because of money. So this company and other companies are telling me the steel's going to raise 30% in the near future. And I don't know what's causing that or if they're just trying to scare you into something. But they're going to agree to probably deliver the tubes in, like, March and give us 90 days to pay for them. So that would put them into the next budget year. And these are tubes for our projects. So just wanted to bring everybody up to speed on that. So, and they'll probably want some kind of a paper signed by the board saying that's fine. So, and that'll lock in the price, which is probably good.
Okay. Terry?
Marlon, I will agree with you on that. I know the steel is jumping for the next 2 to 3 months.
That's,
they say there's steady increases all the way through because of demand. If we're going to use these tubes, I would say, yeah, it would probably be a good idea to lock them in, yes.
And even the greater blade people are saying that it's raised that much. So,
Marlon, if you talk to the Finance Committee, did you talk to Matt relative?
No, I figured out he was in the Bahamas, so, or wherever he's at. I shouldn't say that, but I wasn't going to bother him until he got back, but I will when he gets back.
Okay, good.
Hey, Emily, you're up.
Good morning.
Okay.
Thank you.
We need one for the file, too.
One of those will be yours.
As long as that's the same stuff as you're passing out.
And your word.
All right.
I made just a brief synopsis of the weed department for 2010. One of the biggest things that has happened yesterday, I was notified that the Director of Agriculture, Greg Ibach, announced that there are going to be two new noxious weeds added to the list, Japanese knotweed and giant knotweed. As far as I know, Gage County does not have that. Lancaster does, Sarpy does, and Douglas does. So from what I've been told, it's a big problem. There's also been changes to the Nebraska noxious weed list and the watch list, which is the legal size sheet of paper you got. That's just a draft list. I'm not exactly sure how they plan to implement this. We're supposed to be getting some more information at our Five Rivers Weed Management Area meeting on the 9th of February. But as you can see, there's a lot of weeds on there they're wanting us to keep an eye out for. I attended spring and fall training last year to receive my 20 hours of continuing education that is required. I did also successfully receive my recertification of my commercial applicator's license at fall training. I was awarded the Rookie Superintendent of the Year for 2009. They awarded me that in February of last year. Let's see, we put together a grant that we are in application for right now. We'll be receiving word probably on February 3rd whether or not we're in the running, but southeast Nebraska, especially southeast Gage County, would definitely benefit from that grant application. It's $39,000, which will really help landowners in Gage County. And other than that, I'm planning on attending the March 29th and 30th spring training at Central Community College in Hastings. And let's see, I filed 26 10-day notices with the weed department last year.
I got a question.
Sure.
On the garlic, mustard, and St. John's wort. Aren't those herbs that people plant all the time?
You know, the St. John's wort, it is. But the problem with that is that it's dangerous to livestock, and especially horses. They eat that, it can be really deadly to them. You see it a lot in the greater ditches. And we have a lot of it. And garlic mustard and cutleaf teasel, that's a big one now that they're watching for, and we have a lot of that on the east part of the county. And Cerisa lespedisa, which I'm very thankful that that's a county-designated noxious weed because they overlooked that in the process of using the knotweed to be the next state noxious weed. So I'm glad we have that enforcement there. We did do one force control, and we did 80 acres of musk thistle. I hired Gary Bergmeyer to do that. I think he's pretty fair with his price. It was $930 to spray an 80-acre of infestation. I did put a lien on the property, and the landowner did pay it, so it didn't end up going to the treasurer's office and going against his taxes. So, but other than that...
Okay. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Motion to put it on file.
So moved. I'll make a motion.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. Vote. 6-0. I guess that's the same thing. So I'll keep it there. Jane Ford Whithoff, Public Health Solutions. Okay. Christina, you're up.
Some history on this particular grant. Every 3 years, Gage County has to submit a juvenile justice plan to the Crime Commission. The plan includes what we see as problem areas, things that we need to address to deter kids from getting in trouble. And because we do that every 3 years, Diane Swanson and myself put that together. This year will be the final year, and we'll start to work on next year's plan. But because we do that, we are eligible every year for county aid money. It's based on the population of youth in the county, and every year we are eligible for $19,387. In the past, we have used this money for the community service. It was a contract with the community service coordinator at the Beatrice Police Department. This year, that money will go towards our juvenile diversion program and community service at the same time as I work through that. The match is an in-kind match. It's money that the county spends anyway in our juvenile court system. There's no money coming out of the county's pocket for this grant. So I'm asking for approval of that. Can I answer any questions for you? That's the first one.
No questions? Okay. Need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve.
The second grant that I handed out is also available because we do that juvenile justice plan. It's an enhancement grant. This particular grant is competitive, and it would, if we receive the funding, it would pay for 5 people to go to the search conference in Omaha. It will be held this year in Omaha. I've been once before, and it's good information. We can bring it back and share with several other people in the county and help our county move forward and grow.
So there's 2 we're approving?
Yes.
Okay. What's the second one called?
A Search Institute training. It's the enhancement grant.
Okay. Need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve.
Any questions? Okay.
I just wanted to make a comment or two, Christina, and thank you. You had some difficult circumstances on loss of grants, and you have managed your money very, very well and have done an excellent job. So I personally want to commend you for what you've done.
Thank you.
I would just add to that, Christina's been working with me as far as trying to coordinate the diversion programs and stop classes, and it's been more of a mess than we could even imagine. So she's hanging in there with us, and hopefully we'll get an audit done fairly quickly, and I'll bring that back to the board, so at least you have a report for the first time in how many years on what the diversion is costing.
I think, Roger, that's very appropriate. That discussion has taken place in the past on lack of the audit. And in light of the article in the Omaha paper, it's probably never more important than it is now.
I just point out Christina and I are not married.
Glad to have your opinion, Counselor.
Did everyone see the article in the Omaha paper? Roger, you want to touch on it?
Well, basically, I believe it was Keith County out there. The ex-prosecutor was indicted, I believe, yesterday, and regarding the $11,000 missing from the diversion funds, of which his wife ran it. So.
Very nice.
And he was indicted. There's not been a conviction. He says it was for equipment that he provided, which, all right, we'll all see.
Okay. Any other questions?
Just to update you a little bit on MAPS, we are starting our grant writing process again with this one, and we will be writing the Drug-Free Communities grant again, as well as a regional grant, federal block grant. And so we are going to, you'll see our name out there trying to do surveys and things like that. And if you would participate in those surveys, it would help me a great deal. Thank you.
Good question. On your grants, are you pretty confident you always will get those, or you just don't? It's
a luck of the draw.
Luck of the draw, okay.
Yeah. This particular one is the county aid one. That's a given. But as far as the other grants, you just don't know.
Try to get them and hope to do something with them if you get the money. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Gus, quarterly report.
Good morning. I think Don's office should have distributed your packets your last day or so.
This will be fourth quarter.
Thank you.
Fourth quarter last year.
We'll start with overall calls for service. We were up on those. We had 1,715 compared to 1,703 in the third quarter. Accidents we had 143 versus 74. On citations, we were up on that 143 versus 74. A lot of that comes back to grants we apply for and get on mini grants through highway safety. Sometimes put the guys out in their days off, kind of helps a little bit on patrol time. Warnings we had 72. Last quarter we had 75. Arrests we had 379 versus 311. And on arrests, we had 199 versus 252. Total papers served was 248 versus 227. We had 109 warrants served and 80 to the third quarter. Fees earned of $3,255.49 versus $3,527.50. And mileage earned was $3,011.51 compared to $2,696.31. Money we made off copies was 99 compared to 57. Distress warrants, we collected a little over $6,800 compared to nothing, and that is policy I have is we send out a letter first, and usually around January I start getting a few people come in with the money instead of me going out taking their property, so that's kind of helped us a little bit on that. Partial payments, we received $155.70 compared to nothing that third quarter. Town inspections, we got $2,460 compared to $3,530. Miles we've driven approximately was 60,794 compared to 52,883. Transports for inmates, 3,617 versus 3,954. Reimbursements from grants was 6,867.69 versus 1,330. We had 13 canine deployments versus 8. We had no canine arrests compared to 1 in the third quarter. No drugs were found, and we had marijuana in the third quarter we'd found. 2 meth labs compared to 5 last quarter. Drug violations, we had 5 compared to 12. The reserve deputies gave us some mileage of 15,120 compared to 3,361. Reserve hours for patrol time.
Why was that spike?
I'm guessing, I think I asked Gary about that as well. I think they did a lot of patrol time. They also get involved in the grants as well, pays their overtime, and they might have helped on some transports. So that kind of accounts for that spike. Not to that, and it might not be a typo, but I think that would have probably count for a lot of that here lately. The hours they gave us was 1,826 compared to 502, and that back there, Rex, shows the spike in hours, too, so probably a lot of the grants. Billing checks, 862 compared to 951, and we had 13 open doors compared to 12. Anything on the sheriff's side? No. Okay. I'll defer to Lieutenant Mulberry for the jail reports. I'm going to pass around to you a couple of photos on the shower stalls. You'll kind of see the before and after, so you have some idea what they look like now and what they were before. And then also, we're all back 100% with inmates in the facility as of yesterday. So,
we'll start with the quarterly report sheet for fourth quarter 2010. During the fourth quarter, there was 180 males booked, 65 females, 99 felony charges, 269 misdemeanor charges, 53 other. Inmate medical expense was $11,068.96. We did not hold any outside prisoners in the fourth quarter. Income for fingerprints, $175. Income from inmate phone usage, $1,138.96. Commissary income, $4,213.07. Spent outside housing prisoners, $2,645.04. Then the medical report, the total, once again, $11,068.96. $7,017.67 of that was general care. $4,051.29 was emergency medical. No vision or dental for fourth quarter 2010. So the total lodge was 245 that were booked in. Of those, 151 came from the sheriff's office, 82 from the police department, 7 from Wymore Police Department, and 5 from Nebraska State Patrol. There were 41 alcohol-related arrests.
Okay, you want to touch on your jail renovation last week?
Sure. They put some epoxy around the showers. The showers were kind of rotting and molding, and the tile was crumbling in around the bottom edge just from years of use. And we had to ship out all the inmates because the epoxy, first of all, the smell that radiated through the facility, the ventilation in there is not very good, so we had to ship them out for that reason. Additionally, the epoxy dries really fast, and he had to do a minimum of 4 shower bases at a time, so there was nowhere in the facility to move that many inmates to get those showers done. They needed time to dry properly before they were used. So
what did your staff do during this time?
Well, one of the fire code violations was the wood paneling in the lobby, the break room in the front office, which had to be covered by paint that had a fire spread rating, and primed and painted. So they did that, and that took a few days. And then additionally filing, and then with the showers, he had to grind all the walls in the shower, so it was very dirty and dusty back there, so they had to clean everything up. And so they were kept busy and were wanting the inmates back from the cleaning and painting. Okay. So,
any questions?
I have a question. How many people are working at the jail at a time we're doing this?
I have two officers on duty. Yeah, for 24/7. Days and nights. Correct.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay.
Motion to put the reports on file.
So moved.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Juergens. 6-0 to approve. Approve declaring vehicles a surplus and to advertise for bids for 1978 Dodge 4x4 one and a quarter ton pickup, 79 Dodge Maxi Van, 94 Eagle Vision four door sedan, 201 Dodge Durango 4x4, 201 Ford Crown Vic. Are these from your area, Gus?
Most of our surplus patrol cars. We have some that there might be one or two in here that have never been claimed or do not want them from evidence, and it gives a title.
Abandoned vehicles, then. Do these all run?
I think they all did, except for the Maxi Van. We never did work on that at all. So they did run at the time they were parked.
Okay. Anyone have any other questions? If not, we need a motion to approve declaring vehicles a surplus. And I guess the motion should state, do we want to put them on the internet or do we want to do it locally? We did Purple Wave on some of them, which is an internet site out of Manhattan, Kansas. And we did okay on the highway department, I believe, didn't we? So, if
there is a city auction coming,
I can't tell you. I don't know. We normally do not do very well on our vehicles. I mean, scrap price is about all they bring. So,
hey, Rex, can I ask? I know the city, Kathy mentioned, I think they have a sale like once a year at least for the city. Can the board do a motion? Like one time that will just cover anything surplus that doesn't go to, say, Don's office or my office, then just automatically just go to that sale once a year with the city and you're just done with it for that year, or that's not?
I think we could, but I believe if history is there that at one point they wanted to be aware of what left instead of just all of a sudden it's gone, you know, so.
Give the public notice so they have an opportunity. I mean, if some guy came in here and says, hey, I'll buy these or have an opportunity. I think that's the biggest thing is give the public notice so that if they have an opportunity to bid on it, make taxpayers comfortable.
I would move that we declare these vehicles a surplus and advertise for bids.
Okay.
Do you want to do it in about 2 weeks, or what do you want? When do you want to take bids? How soon do you want to?
2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah. No need going longer.
Yeah.
Gus is wanting to get rid of them over there.
Yeah.
I said, I know you're wanting to get rid of them over there.
I get public complaining every day about parking over there. The sooner the better.
Okay.
So we've got everything we need in the motion?
I think so. So I need
I'll second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve. Approve or disapproving transferring 203 Dodge Durango from Sheriff's Department to Emergency Management. Gus, you want to touch on that?
Mark's not here. I can speak for that. It's one that we did use for a while. We surplused it. I believe he probably touched base with somebody on the board at that time. And I believe they stationed that one out of Wymore now. So if he needs to respond somewhere south, he's got that one. He's going to kind of quip it out. And my understanding is just go from there instead of driving clear back up here to get his vehicle in the parking lot. It's my understanding anyway behind it. So.
It's in the Wymore shop there, and
Finston area, I believe. Yeah.
Mark no longer drives a county vehicle to and from, so if he gets called out, he drives to the Wymore shop and picks up a vehicle.
And it's, I'm sure, close to 200,000. I mean, it's kind of last leg, but gets something out of it.
Just a little history on that vehicle. It sits in the highway barn there, and it. In December at some point, Bob Dorn, I talked to Bob, and he said that they had to jump it when they needed it, and they needed to move it. So I told Bob that day if a vehicle needs drove, somebody needs to go to the county barn to drive that vehicle. That way it's out moving a little bit. Because if that vehicle needs jumping, Mark needs it, it's no good anyway. So if Bob can drive it back and forth some, he should.
Touch base on that. I also have the same problem with one of my units here that we use from time to time, so I just had them put on a little trickle charge battery tender. And that way it just keeps it fresh all the time for emergencies to get going, which was like $50 or $60. Wasn't a lot. So, and it takes very little electricity. So it's something that you might consider for down there as well.
I know we're in the transition period on the committees and what. I mean, formally aren't appointed until today. But I presume, did you talk to Matt, chairman of the Emergency Management Committee, relative to this, or just with Mark?
To Mark Carr? I had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
That's Mark's. That was all Mark's thing.
Did you guys have anything? Did you have?
No, this has been done actually probably 3 to 4 or 5 months ago. How long has that been? And this is probably just formalizing it, and because that vehicle's been down there quite a while now.
It's been off my surplus, Denny, for quite a while, like Rick said. It's just something he wanted to do, and he asked me, so I just mentioned today what it was about.
Is that available, like if I need it down there?
Oh, yeah, it's a county vehicle, yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Sometimes I get called out in the middle of the night.
Yes.
I just feel it's appropriate, as they should come through the committees for recommendations. It is the best way to do business.
We can wait on it 2 weeks because we're just formalizing something.
I think we understand. I don't think we need to wait, but just as a matter of doing business, I think we should.
Okay. Any more discussion?
We need a motion.
Move
on that.
To approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 6-0. Approve or disapprove withholding of FOP dues effective with the next FOP member's payroll check pursuant to the January 20th status quo ordered in the FOP lodge. And Roger, you want to touch on that?
As far as my understanding, talking with Mr. Pigsley, basically in the past we have done that. And my understanding, the Code of Industrial Relations issued an order that basically says everything stayed the same. And I think Mr. Pigsley is interpreting that literally. As far as you guys had already made the decision to do that, it was posted. And I know it may be a source of some negotiation, I'll put it, between the parties here. But you know, basically you're saying we're going to stay pat on this thing and allow the negotiation to proceed.
Okay. So we need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. Vote. 6-0. Approved or disapproved members and alternates to committees and appointed list. I'll read them off. Finance, Chairman Bauman. Committee is Lytle and Setzer. Road and Bridge, Chairman Juergens. Committee, Dorn and Bauman. Emergency Management, EMS. Chairman Bauman. Committee, Dorn and Lytle. Insurance, Chairman Setzer, Committee, Byers and Dorn. Equalization, Chairman, Byers, Committee, Setzer and Juergens. Building and Ground, Winter Lights, Chairman Byers, Committee, Lytle and Bauman. Law Enforcement, Chairman Dorn, Committee, Byers and Juergens. Human Resource, Employee Relation, Chairman Lytle, Committee, Setzer and Juergens. Appointments, American with Disabilities, Adams, Alternate Juergens. Visitors Committee, Setzer, Alternate Lytle. BOSWA, Member Juergens, Alternate Bauman. Blue Valley Community Action, Member Byers, Alternate Dorn. Region 5 Services, Byers Member, Alternate Adams. Personnel Board is Byers and Bauman. The alternates are Setzer and Lytle. And I may add on that that that's a revolving, so the alternates next year are the Personnel Board. Safety Committee is Lytle member, Setzer alternate. Public Health is Byers member, Bauman alternate. SEND is Adams member, Lytle alternate. Five Rivers RC&D, Dorn is member, Adams alternate. General Assistance, Bauman member, Adams alternate. EMS Assessment Committee, Don Harmon chairman. Security Administrator, Miller Gustafson. And then the Jail Inspections first quarter is Adams and Dorn. Second quarter is Lytle and Juergens. Third quarter is Setzer and Byers. Fourth quarter is Bauman and Adams. Need a motion to approve.
I'll make the motion.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. The only thing I want to touch on is Human Resource Employee Relations. That committee will work in conjunction with the county attorney's office. And that is a new committee, and when we approve standing rules, that will need to be ratified within the standing rules. Also, as a committee added on 126-11. And that will be next week. We'll vote on the standing rules.
Well, and technically on Region 5 services, that's Region 5 systems and services.
Correct. Correct. I guess we've never had that on our sheet, have we?
Since I was elected chairman of that board Monday, I probably ought to have it.
You ought to have it correct. As in all the committees, if somebody is going to be absent, they can find somebody to fill in for them. You know, that's a nice thing about it. If you know you're going to be gone, you can ask somebody to set in for you. So is there any other questions on the committees? Vote. 6-0 to approve. Discussion of standing rules. I think Dawn gave you guys the copy of the standing rules. What we need to do is just, if you have questions, concerns on the standing rules, we can discuss them. We will vote to approve them next meeting. And the only addition will be we need to add the Human Resource Employee Relations Standing Rule Committee, and I would like to have it added as a standing committee in our standing rules with the assistance of the county attorney's office. That way our employee practices are consistent with state law and we're headed in the right direction. This committee was generated off the discussion of many a times we have talked about needing a human resource, an administrator. Maybe this is one way we can avoid it. The Marlins, the Phils, the Marks, the Davies, that are our direct employees and their people. This committee can be a buffer. This committee can give consistent, accurate information to them, and they can hear it all at the same time. So it's an extremely important committee. Some may say there's no experienced board members put on this committee. Well, that was done intentionally. You are coming in with an unbiased opinion. There is no perceived, this is the way it's been. This is, you can look at it and form your opinions and the future and the direction without any past history behind you of how things have been done. So it's a tall order. Okay, anything else? A discussion on the standing rules? Okay. Discussion of Gage County Board of Supervisors meetings to be held starting at 6:30 p.m. beginning March 9th for a trial period of 6 months. Kathy?
I have something to say on that. Moving meetings to evenings is not a new idea. It's something I feel is really important to be able to open this up to the public. Most people in this community work between the hours of 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. If we begin our meetings at 6 or 6:30, the average meeting lasts a couple of hours. We're still done by 9 o'clock. This allows people greater access to us as a board. It shows that we are trying to be out there and be available to them. The meetings right now, you know, people are saying, you know, maybe for the last 50 years or more, we've been having meetings in the mornings. Obviously, we're not getting a lot of public attendance here. I had a phone call from Alan Grell, who sat on this board for quite a few years, and he told me yesterday, he said, that is the greatest thing you can do to be accessible and show that we're trying to make changes and trying to be accessible to the public is by moving the meetings to the evenings. And I also got a call from Jim Weeks, who teaches the government classes at the high school. He makes sure that his students attend city council meetings, school board meetings, but we are not available for them to attend. And there's no greater way to get young people involved and interested in government than letting them come to our meetings. And it would then be a requirement of his class that they attend one of our meetings during their semester. I just think that this would be a real positive change for us. It's not really as earth-shattering as what some people make it out to be, but I would like to see it tried for 6 months.
Any other comments? Dennis.
Well, Kathy, I'm sorry, but I would totally disagree with you. Having sat on most of the boards in this community at one time or another, I think what you see right here is the same thing you see at night. If you go to the city council meeting, you go to the school board meeting, it doesn't make a difference where you go. And Gary can talk about this. Unless people have a specific interest, they don't come. They talk to us, say, boy, it'd be nice if we had the opportunity to come in the evening, but then they don't come. We've had budget hearings in the evening to try to give people access. We've had equalization hearings in the evenings to try to give people access. They still don't show up. We have done this for years. We've talked about it for years, and it sounds like a wonderful thing for the taxpayer, for the individual, but it doesn't work. We are a different board. We have elected officials. We don't have administrators like the school district does, like the city council does, to take care of the average business on a daily basis. This board is paid 10 times more or 100% more than any other board in the area. All of the 93 counties stay with a daily meeting for a reason. Our vendors can come to us. Security, what happens as far as the sheriff's department in this big building when we meet at night? We're going to have to ask our elected officials and their staff to come back in at night to meet with us. What kind of additional cost does that do? I know it sounds wonderful. I've had one telephone call from a person who is in favor of it because they have a daytime job and would like to run for the position. Didn't tell me that, but I found out from someone else. And they'd like to move to an evening meeting. We get paid enough. We need to be available on a daily basis. Then you start to compare the evenings. Where are you going to go? If we move this on a Wednesday night, you're looking at church night. You're looking at a total competitive thing with the faith community. I can't do that. There's no way. And you start looking at the other nights of the week, you have basically the same type of situation. I think what we've done, making ourselves available, I don't know of anyone that's ever tried to contact me, to visit with me, that wants to appear before this board that hasn't been able to do it. I've never known of anybody that's been denied or hasn't been able to arrange the time. So I have to disagree with you, and I don't think that we should make that move.
I'm going to take my turn. Denny's right. On the 93 counties, one does a periodic one meeting, night meeting a year. We have, as far as the county, I'm like Denny. I've been involved in things for 20 years with the cities, the fire departments, the county. If it does not personally affect people, they do not attend. The night meetings are no different. The world's not fair. I mean, bottom line, our job is during the day. I have real concerns on moving a night meeting to the night to, is an attempt to deflect the workload that is done during the day. There is so much work that takes place during the day. I got a point I'm going to read from Anderson. But building and grounds, we met with building and grounds at night when we were talking courthouse renovation. Very few in attendance, probably no different than it would have been. The jail steering committees, very few in attendance, very few, zero. The most controversial thing to take place in Gage County in 50 years, the committee was the only one there. So, I mean, those were all night meetings. And if that doesn't have an attendance factor, what will? We would have to sweep the courthouse after every meeting. Every meeting, this building would be exposed, all three floors. How do we control it? We had somebody left inside here once before. It could happen very easily again. If we're going to make it really accessible to the people, this meeting's in Beatrice. Let's go to Odell next meeting. Let's go to Adams next meeting. Let's go to Claytonia next meeting. You know, you got to look at that end of it. The meeting is the easiest part of our job. Our job consists of the daytime we're dealing with. I'm going to read Mr. Anderson. This is not a new discussion. Have you talked about when I come on the board 10 years ago, I believed we should probably have night meetings. I do not believe that at all anymore. I believe the work is during the day. Our meetings should be during the day. And this is from Dave Anderson, 2-12-07, to members of Ad Hoc Standing Rule Study Committee. And this is just some highlights of that meeting. You guys will find out. I save stuff. It may take me a while to find it, Roger, but I dig it out. Night meetings, while popular with city officials and the Sun Editor, night meetings seem impractical for county government. The sheer number of county employees, both salaried and hourly, required at most meetings is troublesome, not to mention the engineers, architects, contractors, vendors, or other agency directors who would find it troublesome to interact at night. The new members will also find that often information is needed during the meeting to best proceed. This information is best secured from the officers that are open during normal working hours, state, county, local, and private offices. I would caution, this is Dave, the committee about wholesale changes in the Gage County Board standing rules. Some suggestions you have received have only 4 weeks of government experience behind them. Not only are county traditions and values at risk here, but the soul of county government. And then I'm going to drop down a few paragraphs. Make no mistakes. These are quotes again. Make no mistakes, there are individuals trying to significantly affect how we do business. Over the years, these pressures have almost always come from those within city government background. County government has a unique role somewhere between cities and the state. We have a unique powers and obligations. We deal with valuation and property tax issues unlike cities, and with a wide variety of other issues from cemeteries to health districts. Our breadth and our scope of issues is such as that we should not rush into short meetings or reduce deliberation or undue coercion to change operations. So those are from Dave Anderson 4 years ago, and I think it's relevant yet today. Any more discussion? Gary.
Yeah, Rex. I guess I agree with Denny on a lot of the points that he has, but I also think this is something that maybe we should look at a little more, because I have had a lot of contact in the last fall when I was running for election. A lot of the people I did talk to, this was something that was important to them. And I've had several calls. I'm not going to say I've had numerous, like somebody on the city council always seemed to do. But I have had several calls of support for this item. I don't really feel comfortable with the 6:30 or the 6 months or anything like that, but I think maybe it's something, and I don't know what committee we'd throw it at, but I think it's something maybe we should sit down and look at, maybe the best way to do it. Maybe it's a 4 o'clock to, that would run till 6 o'clock. Still, you're during the 8 to 5 workday for people that work, 8 to 5. But, maybe that's an option that we can look at. But I think that we really need to sit down and think about what we're talking about here, because a lot of the stuff that you pointed out, Rex, we need to sit down with the sheriff and say, okay, what would we have to do to be able to use the courthouse to do this? What are we going to have to do to close down at night? What kind of hassles is it going to be? But I do think this is something we really need to seriously take a good look at and make a wise decision and keep in mind that our constituents are the ones that we are representing, and if that's something they want us to do, we should look hard at making it work the best we can. So I guess my recommendation is we throw it at a committee. Which committee that would be, I don't know. I guess I'm looking for a little input there.
My comment to those that work, if we took a study of Beatrice, we have a large industrial second shift population. We have the state home large population of second and third shift, Mosaic second and third shift, the restaurants, the supermarkets, the Walmarts. At what point somebody is not going to be able to make it? We have a night meeting. I showed up for the meeting today. You had a night meeting. We're off on the schedule. I think it makes it very difficult for people to follow when we're going to have a board meeting. I think the continuity of that every Wednesday they know, every Monday we have our standing committees. I think it's just more practical to keep a solid format that people can follow and know. There's always a certain element that wants change in everything. They've been that way forever. That same element of change, are they going to attend our meetings? They could probably attend them now. The people that you've made question to could attend our meetings today if they chose to. So what difference is a night meeting? 4 years ago, we started on the webcast of we were going to webcast our meetings. And we have the voice-activated webcast now that you can punch up a date and voice-activate our meetings. I do believe we probably should go with a web pod, Skype, whatever you want to call it, to where our meetings are on the web. The argument is cable television here in Beatrice. The argument's always been that's not fair to the county. 40% of our population could watch it, 60% can't. A webcast could be available to everybody if they had internet or choose to add internet. The cable TV system, if it went everywhere in the county, I'm in full favor of implementing the cable TV to live cast our meetings. Or the nice thing about the webcast is they can pull it up on whenever they want to and watch it then. So any more discussion on Kathy?
Yes, I want to thank Denny because he did bring up a really good point, and that is people that would like to run for this office who can't take off work. There's a lot of people out there who are very, very good, dedicated people who would like to run for this office, and they cannot take off for work. And so it would just open up a lot of talent, which I know that could be cutting my own throat by doing that, but by moving to night meetings, because you're not only making it more accessible to the public, which I agree, there may not be more than, you know, a couple people sitting out there if we go to night meetings, but at least we're saying we are trying. We have made it accessible to the second and third shift people by having day meetings for the last how many years, but we haven't made it accessible to the first shift people. And you may say there's a large population of second shifters, but it's way, way down from what it was a couple of years ago because of the economy. So why not give it a try, see if people show up. At least we're saying we are trying to be accessible to you instead of saying you take off work and you lose wages if you want to be here.
I want to ask you a question there, Kathy. When you say that there's people that can run for the job but they can't come because of the daytime, but they could do it at night, so you're saying you'd rather have somebody in attendance and meeting than doing the work that this job requires?
I am not saying that. I'm saying
how do you get the crossover? If you can't do the meetings during the day, how do you do the crossover if I can attend the meetings at night but I can't do the work that's required during the day? Because our work is, 90% of our work is done during the day.
A lot of the work is done during the day, but there's no reason why the committee meetings can't be done in the evenings also.
How do you deal with the people we deal with then without the overtime, the security issues, the additional expenses?
Okay, like today I see Marlon, I see Gus, and I see Don and Roger, who are not formally on the board. They are all salaried, and their deputies, I believe, are salaried. So therefore, they could take comp time rather than overtime.
Deputies technically can draw overtime.
But they can also take comp time. Isn't that correct?
I guess my real concern is, people, if they know what the job is and they run for the job and the work is, traditionally the workload has been during the day,
right,
and then wanting to shift it to at night, somewhere along the line the work isn't going to get done. We have no administrator to fall back on. We have no staff to fall back on. If we don't physically do it, it is not going to take place.
And I understand that, but I also understand that a lot of it could be done evenings. And you know, I just feel that why not give it a try? Why not say we want to be accessible? We want you to be able to come to our meetings, whether you choose to come or not. Maybe that would cut down on some of the negative reports in the paper if people had the option to come to the meeting.
What do you mean, Luke?
I don't mean from the paper. I mean that people blog in saying, well, look what they're doing. Well, they're not here to hear our side of it. If they were here, they might say, oh, now I understand why you voted to pay this or why you did this or that. Because they, and if they don't come, then you can say, well, you know, you had the option to be here without taking off work.
We aren't certain that many of those bloggers aren't here or haven't even sat on this board because they don't have to identify themselves. They can get on the blog and blast everybody without actually being truthful. So I have a real problem with that. Kathy, this is not a part-time job.
I understand.
When you're adjusting it for people who work all day and adjust your time so that they could run because they can do it at night, you can't do this job. And we get paid too much to look at a part-time job. I'm sorry. I really apologize to you, but there's no way that I can justify even making the change to get people confused.
Rex, I got a question. Right now, we're every two Wednesdays, or we meet. Are we mandated or anything, or how did we? Has it always been that way, or who?
You would have to modify the structure of your standing rules. I believe it states
rules.
In there that how our meeting format is, correct?
Right, it's in the standing rules.
So it would have to be modified, and anything can be corrected or changed.
Okay.
Any more discussion?
I'll just make one comment. I don't know if I'm ready. I don't think I'm ready to support going 6 months evening meetings. I could see going to maybe a couple, three meetings every so often here just to see if there is enough interest out there. I could support that. Right now, I can't support going to six months of straight evening meetings. I do like Gary's comment, though. Maybe we need to have some kind of committee, and I don't know what it is, sit down and discuss it or look into the details with the security for the courthouse and not only that, visit with people like Don and Marlon and I can't think of her name now.
Patty.
Patty, you know, how it's going to affect their office and how it's going to affect their staff. I know today Dawn didn't need to call over and get any of her people to bring us information. A lot of the meetings we attended, several times Dawn went back here on the phone and called up and had them come over here. Now, that's one thing we'd have to give up at night, or they'd have to have somebody over there in that office.
Well, if the discussion's over on that, forming a committee as you requested is going to be this easy. The committee is going to be Gary, Denny, Rex, and Myron. How's that sound? We got some of the past, we got some of the future. And it's an even mix of the history and the new outlook. Gary?
I'd like to also suggest that maybe we have Roger involved in that discussion.
We will.
Quite thoroughly.
Yeah. Last county attorney was listed on this. And I do believe it. The last one I saw was Dick Smith sat in on it also. So, I mean, yeah. We will get together on a date for that here somewhere down the road then, and we'll check calendars if that meets with everyone's approval. And, Kathy, comfortable with that right now?
I feel that the committee is rather stacked, but...
How do you see stacked?
You're opposed, Danny's opposed, Myron's opposed, and Gary wants to do like in every other. I think it's stacked, but I will go with it.
Okay. You will find out it doesn't always work as we want. Okay. Jane, I was going to give up on you.
Well, yeah.
And he enjoyed it.
Yeah. I'm Jane Ford Witoff, and I've not had the pleasure of meeting all of you. Some of you I have. And I'm Director of Public Health Solutions, District Health Department. And we are governed by, just for those of you that are new, we're governed by a Board of Health, of which all the members are appointed by the county boards. And half of the members are county board members, and then the other half are public-spirited citizens, a dentist and a physician. And our responsibilities are to promote and protect the health of the citizens of our district. And in so doing, we have to assess what the health needs and health problems are in the district. Some of them are urgent and some of them are longer term. And I wanted to come by. I'm trying to come by more frequently, four times a year, to tell board members what we've been doing and what the needs are that we've been identifying. And I was so late on yours, I'm probably going to be back maybe next month. But anyway, so it'll be fairly quick. I wanted to apologize. Here I am. I look probably pretty bad to the new people, but I want to apologize again for missing the meeting last month, but in December, because my husband went in for a colonoscopy, and then they swooped down on him and did major surgery. So that was my problem, and I do appreciate your consideration. There are a couple things that happened that have happened that I think are of great interest to you. One is we do have our annual report, which I wanted to. It's a pre-publication copy, but it'll give you some idea of the kinds of things that that we do. And I probably don't have enough copies, but I do want to. I think one of the things you'll see in our annual report is that we have considerably increased the amount of work that we do for the resources that we get. We get roughly $350,000 from the state and from the tobacco funds, essentially from the tobacco funds. And with that money, we do our core functions of really looking at what the problems are determining what needs to be done either quickly or in the long run, and then seeing to it that it's done. In that regard, we certainly don't have enough money to attend to all the needs in the community, and of course we're not responsible for all of it. We work with other people to get those problems addressed. In addition, we often apply for other grants and contracts in order to do those responsibilities, and in that way we are able to meet the needs of the community without in a way that I think is very good. We had some kind of bad news in the past month. You know, one of the areas that Gage County has been really concerned about is dilapidated buildings, and we had two grant applications that we submitted that would have a bearing on dilapidated buildings would help deal with those problems. One was focused on lead, and one was focused on healthy homes, neither of which did we get. And unfortunately, and this too often happens, they went to the metropolitan areas. In our entire region 7 area, which is, I think, 4 states, not one went to a rural area, and that's of great concern. So I don't know how we're going to handle that, but that's a continuing problem to us. So we're going to be looking for other options because we have tremendous community support for those projects. Another thing that we just completed this past year, actually the survey was done in 2008-2009. We do what we call a behavior risk factor survey. This is done, it's a Centers for Disease Control survey of health behaviors, self-reported health behaviors. So we have the scoop on you and what you do bad. Anyway, what we've done is we add a little bit of money to what we have to pay to do a survey of our entire district, and we do a survey of just the county, one county a year. And the one for Gage County was done in 2008-2009. That's when the calls were actually made. And, we just got the resources together to analyze it, and it's going to be published shortly. But some of the points I wanted to raise to you, and some of it is skewed because you have a little bit of an older population, but overall, in Gage County, there are less people insured than there are in Public Health Solutions District and in the state as a whole. They're about 18%, and that's going to that will increase with the closure of businesses. Also, 13% of people said that they could not see a physician due to cost in the past year, and that also is in excess of what the state and the local and the district average are. And that's an area, I think, of major concern for us in the entire district. We have critical shortage areas for dentists, and I think access to care is just a major problem. In that regard, we are working with all the hospitals on what we call a network. We submitted a network development grant, and this grant would enable us to work with the hospitals to increase access to care and also decrease inappropriate use of emergency rooms and, you know, money wasters where that money could be used for better better use. We won't hear about that until May, and I do hope we get it. We had all six hospitals in our district sign on. I wanted to know if you have any particular concerns before I mention some other topic that probably Dennis will drop his teeth on. I mean, I hope your teeth
don't
drop.
My only concern, are you going to touch on the little boy?
Oh, I can.
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay. I don't know in what you would like to know, but his.
I think reassure the community that it's not, it's controlled, it's.
Yes. Actually, meningitis, Neisseria meningitidis, as the infecting organism, is something that's very difficult to pass from one person to another. And in fact, 25% of us have it in our throats. So really, these cases can turn up just because your resistance is down, and for any number of other reasons, you can get meningitis not just from that, but from other things too. So these cases don't always come from a person. You know, they come from the person themselves. But as far as passing the bacteria from one person to another, it's very difficult to transmit. I don't want to say very difficult. It's more difficult to transmit than a cold or a flu would be. And I think some people, you know, we're concerned, oh, I'm going to walk into a room where someone with meningitis had been, or I'm in a classroom, or I was in a meeting where someone with meningitis had been. And those situations do not pose a increased risk for people. There's been a lot of research done by Centers for Disease Control, and you really have to be in a more confined environment with somebody where you know, you're getting really close to them. Have an opportunity for, you know, major droplets of saliva or whatever to get on you, you know, through coughing or sneezing or whatever. It really has to be pretty close contact to get that. The situation that we had a fourth grader who came down with meningitis. I wish we had heard about it a little earlier, but we did not. But, you know, you can't do anything about that. People aren't always, you know, aware that such a thing could happen. Anyway, she was rushed to the hospital, and she did very well in responding to her treatment. In fact, she was better the next day. I mean, not totally better, but she was considerably better. Within her class, what we did, according to the Centers for Disease Control, we contacted all the families in the class and communicated to all the people in the school that those that had close contact with her would receive prophylaxis, which is a dose of antibiotics, essentially. And we were strong on those that had really direct contact with her getting the prophylaxis, and then others that were more distant, we told them to go see their physician because we just don't have the capacity to swoop in and do that right away. Anyway, as it turned out, just 2 days later, the little kiddo in the preschool came down with it. And and it's turned out to be really, really a tough thing for that kiddo because you probably read in the paper or heard or whatever that he has had to have four amputations. I believe his legs were amputated.
Why is that? I didn't understand that. They didn't go into detail on it on TV.
When you have an overwhelming infection like that, and it's not just with Neisseria, but often when you have an overwhelming infection that just, you know, invades your body, what happens is it triggers a mechanism within your body to form blood clots. They see all those bacteria as foreign, and they so they'll develop blood clots, and you have what they call DIC, which is, it's disseminated blood clotting throughout your system. That cuts off the blood flow to much of your, sometimes to your organs, to your legs and whatever. And so, that occurs, plus you have the invasiveness of the bacteria itself and what it might attack. But the little kiddo would start, he started out with having a purpuric rash. In other words, there were fairly sizable, like black and blue marks. They appeared like black and blue marks on his body. And then those spread, and that was the evidence that you could see externally that he was in DIC. Of course, the lab results confirmed that too. Also, when you have that happen, what the blood that's left in your system that's not clotted has an inability to clot, so you have a tendency to bleed. So it's a terrible situation to be in, really, really terrible. And so it's not uncommon for people that have had major overwhelming infections like that to end up with amputations. It's just not unusual at all. And of course, at times they die. I mean, he was about as sick as you can get. I mean, it was really, really tough, and it still is tough, for the family. I think he's undoubtedly going to have some brain damage. I don't know to what extent, and he's 4 years old, and he may recover to some extent. He is following commands of moving his head, simple commands, but we don't really have any more information about that. But anyway, getting back to the situation with the fourth grader and then the preschooler, you say, well, what's the connection there? Well, we never were able to find a direct connection, which I think causes some people concern. But we believe that what happened, and this isn't unusual because it's happened in other areas too, they have people can get what you call asymptomatic cases. You remember I mentioned that it's always in your throat? Well, it's not just, off and on with Neisseria. You can get a case that where you have a strong individual that fights it off and they might just get mildly ill and you don't even recognize it. We believe that may have happened here, where someone with a mild case, potentially the sibling, was able to then spread it to the little kiddo got it. Yeah, and there's a benefit on Friday, 5 to 8 in DeWitt, at the DeWitt Community Center. And also, you can make contributions for the boy and his family, because this is a tremendous financial hardship, to the DeWitt the State Bank of DeWitt. I think that's what it's called now. And I think that it would be very much appreciated. You have to understand they're now in Iowa City. They had to go from Children's Hospital where they got wonderful treatment, but Iowa City had a device that enabled them to do even more treatment, I think probably related to his blood clotting, that really helped him. But it's really a tragedy. As far as other cases, the period of communicability is 2 to 10 days, and most often 3 to 4. And the last time we saw somebody with symptoms was on the 13th. So we're beyond what any cases that might have generated from the boy, unless they were asymptomatic, and then you can, we'll continue with our very close watch of the situation, because the way that the Centers for Disease Control does it, and you have to understand they deal with bigger places, they consider 3 cases within 3 months as being an outbreak. Well, they wouldn't have considered ours an outbreak. I considered 1 case as an outbreak to me, but, on their technical definition. So as far as they're concerned, they want us to intently watch, which of course we will for these 3 months. But I think that, as far as the school goes, I think everything is going well. You know, they went over and above what they needed to do. And I think also with the wariness of parents, making sure that they keep track of what's happening with their children. You know, any high fever, headache, what do you call it, stiff neck, where are the major symptoms, and then there are others, too, that they should be, you know, really wary of that kind of thing. If there's another case, which I don't expect that there will be, but if there would be, it may or may not be related to these. You know, I think everybody would assume they would be, but you know, they may or may not be. We have no indication that it will spread beyond this, and this, you know, the state agrees. And
I think it might be good to note, Jane, that you're staying on top of this with all of the school districts.
Yes.
And with the hospitals, health care centers. So Public Health Solutions is not just backing away from this, but making sure people know the symptoms, know what to be looking for, and so our educators all the way across the board are on top of it.
Yeah, you're right. The very day that we knew about this, we sent a letter out to all of the superintendents with a letter that they could send to their children or their children's parents. And we are, you know, we do actively do active surveillance. There isn't at this time anything else we can do to prevent the illness. It is not prevented by the vaccine that's available. We were hoping it would be, but we got the word back that it is not preventable. The fact is the vaccine protects against other strains, not this particular strain. So that's unfortunate. If it had been, we would be giving many more immunizations. And we did offer that to people, but until we knew what strain it was, we really couldn't with confidence tell people, oh, you're not going to get this because you're getting this immunization. That's not the case.
Jane's office has been a real resource for the county. She was in on the ground floor of the EMS assessment. The hundreds of hours that we met on EMS assessment, she was a resource on looking up information. If Adams Rescue ever needs all the information you provided on trying to draw from Larimer County, the county in Kansas, on all these things that we had, her office participated in it. They looked up an awful lot. The LEPCs in the county, Local Emergency Planning Committee, they're involved in it. They're involved in our LEOP plan, Local Emergency Operation Plan. So her office is a resource. If you ever need to contact her, because my experience, Jane, you've been very helpful, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. That's our job. I do want to explain a little bit about the surveillance, since Dennis brought it up. What we do, and you may not be aware of it, I tell people, but I know it's, unless you really need to know, you aren't going to always pay attention. But we have contact with the schools every week, at least one day a week, to find out how many health-related absences there have been and what kind they are. And during this time, we've really increased our contact with the schools. And so anytime there is somebody absent, you know, they're wary of the symptoms, and we can get right on it like that. And so that's what ordinarily happens. The same situation or a similar situation is with the physicians. The physicians know what to look for, and we have continuing contact with them. So, and also the public many times will call us. So we, you know, while we can't be there, you know, with every person, I think we're about as close to the situation as one could get. And, you know, we have to, the board voted to really commend the Tri-County Schools for their handling of it. I think they just did an exceptional job. And when we actually had the clinic there for the preschoolers, I was amazed that there wasn't a lot of panic. I anticipated there would be, but I think that a lot of people's fears were allayed. Since then, we've had people concerned about wrestling tournaments or things like that at Tri-County Schools. And really, there's no indication that is a risk at all, no more than any other event. So I don't know. You can't assure people 100%, but I'm as sure as I can be that that everything's in hand. We sure as heck hope so, because we don't want to go through this again. Not with any kiddos, that's for sure.
Jane, I would just, at this point, I'd like to add that I'd like to second what you just said, because my wife's kindergarten teacher at Tri-County.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I got to partake in the disinfecting process.
Oh, lucky,
so,
lucky duck.
I'd just like to say that it was something that Tri-County took extremely seriously, and sometimes it seemed like they took a little bit of a bad rap, you know, kind of in the community, you know, different people saying things that weren't true. And I think it's important that what you said gets out, that Tri-County did everything they possibly could to make sure that this was taken care of, and they did very thorough cleaning and taking care
and
of.
And more than they needed to do,
yes.
Because there was no recommendation to clean the facility or to discontinue events, and I think it was their wisdom in doing so to allay people's concerns. I thought they did an outstanding job. Can I say something now for Dennis's teeth to drop? I hope you don't have any teeth that can drop, but I was kind of, I'm sorry. I always say the wrong thing. No. You might remember we had an office here for a short time. Actually, it wasn't a short time, but it was often across the way, over the river and through the woods. And one of the concerns that I have, and we have talked with the board, but not I haven't talked with them particularly about it recently. You know, we do rent a facility in Crete, and we had hoped to get, Colake have other services, service providers locate with us because of the problem with the number of people that have needs there. And that's not happened, but, you know, we, as any organization, you end up filling the space. But as I look at as our strategic plan and in discussions with the board, it's the board's intent to assure that all the services are throughout the district. And, you know, ideally it would be nice to have an office in each county, which, you know, we don't have the capacity to do. But it's always bothered me that this county has the most population, yet we have no presence here.
It's always bothered me, too.
Yes. And I wanted to raise it on the chance that there might be some opportunity, free, of course. No, I'm just joking. It would be nice to have it, to have some financial assistance. But for a location for this department here, not that we would move out of Crete, because there is a need there. But I believe that there should be a presence here. And I would like to see that. I have some idea about how we would staff it. And, you know, I really very much would like that. But what we need is to find a potential location at a reasonable cost. You know, right now we pay $2,600 in Crete, which is a horrible amount of money, but I guess it's the market. And we have looked at some facilities here that are maybe $600 or whatever.
BSDC has plenty of space right now. That's what Dawn just mentioned.
Yeah,
who do you talk to? Who did you talk to for your rooms?
Dan Howells. I never talked to them. Some of the previous county attorney did, but I would say Dan Howells is the CEO of the person to start talking to right there. Been very good to work with for us.
Yeah. Ideally, we'd like something that where people would know where we are, that they have access. I think there's a tendency sometimes, or at least an assumption, that where you are is where you're going to see the needs. And there happen to be a lot of needs in Saline County, and I believe we do extend out. But when we went through the H1N1, we really realized the deficiency we have here. I mean, it really became evident when we couldn't get the immunizations.
We've talked about the deficiency in a lot of things. The more we regionalize,
yes,
we're the largest population of the many things that we regionalize, but we never get a presence. And I think it's becoming more and more aware with our boards that we need the presence in Gage,
yes,
County. If they're drawn from a 9 region area and our population alone is higher than the other,
yes,
7 combined, then there's something out of whack on how we're doing it.
I agree.
The number of people that we've served, and so many of the boards that I sit on, the number of people we serve in Gage County, but actually what we're doing as far as funding is concerned, as far as making ourselves available, but... It's,
yeah,
interesting because your chair and your vice chair of the Public Health Solutions Board are from Beatrice.
They are.
And Southeast Community College might be an option you might visit about, too. There have been at least 2 offices out there that have closed, And I'm not sure what SCC has done about that, but you might make a contact with Dennis Sedgwick possibly.
Yeah, we will. We had earlier, too, but we will do that. I think ideally we would like a location where people can see us, because when we had our little trailer out here, we got a lot of traffic, and I think it's a disservice.
Space.
Yeah.
Surely you jest, Mr. Chairman. I would have, but not now.
And not in a jail either.
I promise that won't happen.
So I just wanted to raise it, not that this is something the board's going to need to mull over, but I thought I would mention it since you're remodeling here.
We're to the end of that, though.
I know, but I just thought I would mention it anyway, just so it's on the table.
Thank you. A motion to put a report on file.
So moved.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Vote.
Thank you.
Thank you. 6-0 pass. Does anyone need a break?
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a 5-minute break, and then we'll finish up with committee reports. Session due to security concerns at the courthouse through the sheriff. So we will take a five-minute break or so. Okay, we're going to reconvene the Gage County Board of Supervisors. Attendance by observation: Juergens, Dorn, Adams, Lytle, Byers, and Setzer. We will do committee meetings to get them knocked out, and then we were going to have a short executive session. And anyone have anything on committee reports?
Well, let me bring you up to date on the met with the architects yesterday, and everything is getting wrapped up and very, it's just as you walk through the courthouse, it's very obvious we're coming to the end and getting things done. But the north and the south windows and the sills were the last project, and those are getting completed. There's still the windows and the emergency management area that they say they aren't going to have to bother inside. Actually, they can do it all from the exterior, but those are coming up. We have run into apparently a sprinkler head over on the south side that when you walk through, that if you're Blake Butler, you'd knock it off with your head, and or you raise your hand, you knock it off. So that has to be adjusted up. We're notified that we're 10 days out on the lights on the exterior of the courthouse grounds, so those are on their way in. Philippi is going ahead and doing the work that needs to be done on the inside as far as all of the wiring and what have you, so when they get here, they're going to be able to, bless us, the snow's not too deep, be able to get those up, which will be significant. So we're quickly coming to the end. The architects have, as part of the original strategic master plan, and you will all get one of these books which tell about what the original plan was, and then the suggestions, the things that we didn't deal with on this remodel and on the bond issue relative to the exterior. Some of that is the ceiling around the chimneys and some of the exterior stonework and what have you that we're going to need to do too. But they're not emergencies, so there are things that we can look at and make some decisions in the future on what we want to do. But we'll be addressing those in detail and talking about them at our next Building Grounds Committee meeting, which will be 2 weeks from this last Monday, which is whatever, the 9th, I think, or the 8th, something like that.
Can I touch on that, Denny?
Sure.
I don't know when it was, a month ago or so, I asked all elected officials to give a punch list, and Don's going to run off a copy of that punch list from the elected officials. A real concern I have on their punch list is they are being told the doors. The security company says this is the doors, the way the doors are going to be. And just like if you Patty's door, you close it, and they open the exterior door, it opens her door. So
that is being brought up to them, and the architects are discussing this with them, and I think it is part of the punch list. And they're going through today with the security people, going through all of that and talking about those issues. We have some issues on some other things with security. So
I guess maybe it's all hindsight, and we're pretty good at it in hindsight. Can you ask them why we don't have a locking mechanism per office, that it takes somebody to activate the system to lock the doors? Why can't an individual office, if the need demands, lock their door down? I mean, there isn't an office that can lock their doors unless it's activated by the company. and maybe we need some sort of override. Maybe we need...
We can't even get our door to shut tight. We couldn't even...
You're kidding.
Maybe each individual office, we need, hate to say, a deadbolt when we just spend this kind of money. But there's got to be some sort of system that we can lock and close the door. And so that's something on that list also.
Okay. I'm going to be sure to try to catch Jonesy and Mitch, because I think they're supposed to be down today to look.
Yeah, if they're here, we need to catch them today and make it very clear to them. What else, Dennis?
That's it, other than I did say I have your representative to the Region 5 Systems Board and Region 5 Services Board, and I was elected chairman of that group on Monday.
Congratulations.
So. I'm your new chair of that organization, so thank you. We do have the county board workshop coming up. You all have been notified on that. I do happen to be one of the presenters on the 10th, the morning of the 10th. They were supposed to have a legislative advocacy panel. I found out yesterday I am the panel. So I will be doing the presentation on that. So if you just want to stay in bed a little longer. And
Terry, you want to talk Road and Bridge? Or?
Well, basically, in the Monday's meeting, we talked about the overall condition of the roads, you know, where we were at up to date, and spoke about the Barnston Bridge project completion date. And Marlon said whenever the... weather conditions were right, you know, this spring. All it was just a matter of basically moving dirt in and hard or rock and graveling the approaches to the bridge. It was basically done. And then we spoke, Marlon touched on it, about closures of some roads. And basically, last but not least, the budget problems that could be facing the road and bridge if we have a bad spring. Hopefully we don't, but we could end up a little short on money there. So that was basically it.
You want to touch on how he has expected dates for completion of some things so everyone knows?
I think, well, he really didn't know about the Barnston Bridge project, you mean?
Well, just like the Liberty Road closure, the grader route studies.
He had to do a lot of research on those. Road closed, and Myron brought up about ethanol plant, about a road closure at the ethanol plant. There had to be studies done on that. I think it's down the road, but it's an issue that we'll have to look at on two closures for sure that people are wanting.
But I don't have that paper with me, but we put down some things.
Roger
about,
had it.
About, well, not for the ethanol plant, but about when you, some things you were expecting Marlon to do.
Yeah.
I think that's what he was talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I don't know.
I guess it's just a clear understanding that way.
Yeah. Basically.
Right here. Yeah.
Yeah. I see it. Yeah. The Riverty closure project, February 11th was the date we would bring in front of the greater route study. Basically, by the March 9th meeting, he was going to come up with a study as far as the overall spot rock policy, March 9th also, and then planning and zoning will be the April 6th meeting, and junkyard, there were discussion about facilities that had junk, and that was going to be brought up at the April 6th meeting also.
Yep, that way everyone knows. Anything else for committee reports? If not, I would like to have a motion to go into executive session to discuss security concerns of the sheriff at the courthouse.
I'll make that motion.
Is that appropriate, Roger?
Yep.
Okay.
Note your time when you...
Okay. Motion by Dorn.
Second.
Seconded by Byers at 10:42 to go into executive session. Discussion, vote. 6-0 to approve. And there won't be any action that taken coming out of it. Motion to...
Wait a minute. Okay.
Lionel made a motion to come out of executive session, seconded by...
Seconded.
By Dorn. Discussion. Vote.
Lionel, you're not voting to come out?
Is there anything else for the good of the order?
What the time he came out on exactly?
Come out at 11:15. Anything else for the good of the order? Gage County Board of Supervisors adjourned at 11:15.